You're listening to The Big Cast, your source for the latest in financial technology. Brought to you weekly by the Best Innovation Group with your hosts, John Best and Glenn Sarvati.
Welcome back to another edition of The Big Cast. My name is Glenn Sarvati on behalf of the Best Innovation Group, where we like to do cool things with financial technology. And I feel silly for saying that because I have the big man right here. Mr. John Best, we're doing one of our episodes together, and usually when we do, John, you're the one that actually kicks us off, so I feel like I'm stepping on your toes here, but I know you are also, as we just discussed, in a quiet place.
I'm in a quiet place, yes. I'm working out of a co-working place because we are in our property out in Tennessee, and I am just trying to keep it a bit down, on the down low, hanging in the Tennessee. I'm at a place that celebrates a day called Mule Day, and that is a big deal here. I didn't realize what a big deal it was.
Mule Day, M-U-L-E, Mule Day?
Yeah, Mule Day, as in like a burro or a mule. You should look it up. It's a big deal here in Columbia, Tennessee.
Has it just happened? Have we just passed Mule Day?
No, I just was reminded of it because... Because I went to get some coffee in the break, and there's a big picture of it. And apparently they had like a 5-year hiatus during World War II. And it got me thinking about other hiatuses, like the pandemic and how many things that had a hiatus from that. And then thinking about, wow, the war probably caused a lot of that. But it is a big deal. Mule Fest, I think, is what it's called here.
So I'm going to
hear from here and know about it. And you're on the call or you're listening to this podcast. Give us a shout out for Mule Fest.
I'm 2021. I will have to look that up.
Yeah.
Well, we had a plan, this is what I love about these things is we can always call an audible when we're doing these things on a real time basis. We had a plan to discuss the whole development with Bitcoin, where the country of El Salvador announced that they were going to declare Bitcoin legal tender, basically in parallel with the U.S. dollar, which is their other legal tender, which created a bit of excitement and actually drove the price of Bitcoin up for a bit. Right after Mr. Elon Musk made a little comment about how maybe Tesla would start accepting it for cars again after all. And then since we planned to have that conversation, the world has shifted yet again.
It crashed.
As we are speaking, I think it's actually kind of, I've hopefully hit a bottom, but it's actually popped up again a bit. It fell below 30,000 earlier today. I think it's sitting at about 32,000 today, right now, if I'm not mistaken. We're recording on a Tuesday afternoon.
Yep, right around there. And it's been as low as 30,000. I think today's low for Bitcoin was...
I looked, it was like 29.2, I think was the low point.
Well, it's fascinating. So let's talk about El Salvador for a second. So yeah. El Salvador decides that, and I'm going to make sure I got this story correct. Some surfer dude shows up and convinces them to use Bitcoin as their national currency, or one of the adopted national currencies next to the U.S. dollar. And so they decide, yep, this is as good a currency as any. It's already in place. Let's do this. And that's as far as we got, right? And then all of a sudden, there's people bringing lawsuits and all kinds of crazy stuff happening over there in regards to this decision that they put together.
Well, I think a couple of interesting things to me. One is, I mean, it was not very well communicated or thought out, kind of as you pointed out. I mean, ostensibly, I mean, the way it was worded is, I think within 90 days, basically every McDonald's in El Salvador would have to be ready to accept Bitcoin if you wanted to buy a Big Mac, which, you know, as we all know from an implementation standpoint, ain't too easy.
Yeah. Well, I guess the word that they used is they're making it legal tender.
Yes.
So when you say legal tender, then I think that does sort of it's like when the euro became, legal tender, they had to accept it. And I think that's the key, right? They have to accept it in that space. And so my question was, people were already using, if you look at like adoption by countries, they certainly were on the list in terms of a higher one because of, that whole area and of the world and the issues they've had. But why would they choose, what do you think drove them to choose what essentially the rest of the world looks at as a security asset, right? Or more of a security. What do you think made them choose that over, say, Dogecoin, which, you know, Mark Cuban is using in, because, you know, I mean, it's one of these things is at the moment $32,000. You're going to have to pay everything in little, it's going to be like yen where, you know, what's your rent? Oh, it's 5 billion yen, you know, because it was, you know, the value of the money and the scale of it was just not thought through. I think Satoshi's being basically the smallest measurement of basically in Bitcoin, you can go out 9 decimal points and that's where you wind up in the Satoshis. Everything's going to be paid in Satoshis. Nobody's going to pay $32,000 at McDonald's for I just think it complicates things because it's not sort of round numbers, if nothing else.
You want my generous view or you want my cynical view?
I'll
do both.
And then and shift generous.
Well, my cynical view is, I know the International Monetary Fund's already come down fairly hard. Now, I wouldn't say hard on them, but I saw an article we can post that I saw on Reuters that they reached out to the International Monetary Fund and said, oh, could you help us make it happen? We don't really have a plan to do this. And they said, we can't help you on that. But apparently there's some interesting kind of behind the scenes dealings where there might be some sleight of hand going on here too, where they may be trying to obfuscate some other challenges that they have. On the generous side, I will say that they meet all the, as you pointed out, it's already an area of the world that's actually quite active in Bitcoin and in general cryptocurrency use. And it checks all the boxes of the kind of things we've talked about before, of where this solution actually makes a ton of sense. They are very reliant on incoming cross-border payments for their economy. You can do that on a much more efficient basis with cryptocurrency, with Bitcoin. They have a very high unbanked population. This actually creates a financial inclusion opportunity. And they don't even have their own currency. They're using the US dollar. So, you know, one of the other things is people who have lost faith that there's no, you know, no real faith in the existing sovereign fiat currency of the land. So, I mean, those are three pretty big check marks of places where it would make sense to do something like this. Now, it also makes sense to do something like this in a coherent, planful fashion where you actually have, you know, some backup to what you have to say.
Yeah, it seems like it was on a whim. He announced it at the Bitcoin conference, like at the end of it. He was like, we're going to the moon, you know, and yeah, it was very quick because, you know, the challenge, I mean, let's McDonald's aside, that also means all the banking institutions will have to accept it.
Right. Sounds like your co-working is getting more co over there. I hear a little something in the background.
That means that they're all going to have to, banks are going to actually have to accept this as well.
Yeah, right? they're the ones, I mean, when you think about the folks who have to actually implement this thing pretty quickly, I would think they're absolutely on the front lines. You know, they're going to be the ones that probably folks are going to be turning to saying, hey, how do I do this? And if they can't help, I mean, who the heck is supposed to be able to, you know, to get this thing off the ground?
So you mentioned something earlier, and I'm not sure that I agree with it. You mentioned that you believe that this could help with the unbanked, and I think it can help with the unbanked in the sense of, to your point, of the regulatory concerns, but it seems like from a technology perspective, there's definitely a big gap there.
I don't know about the situation in El Salvador. I don't know what it looks like on the ground, but I get the distinct impression that they probably don't have a lot of bank branches. People do not have bank accounts and they may be living in banking deserts. So if I can assume that it's a bit like Kenya and places where things like M-Pesa took off, it doesn't have to be cryptocurrency, but if you don't have access to a branch, but you have access to a mobile phone and a cell network, that's where I'm coming from on that one.
Yeah, and I would agree. I could see that point, but it seems like part of what I think he was trying to do was to create an environment where they may attract some entrepreneurial type business. I mean, it seems like right away you would have an opportunity to create a very simple Bitcoin wallet that would work in a, you know, with, you know, for those groups that maybe have the wherewithal to have a phone but don't necessarily have the understanding of it.
Well, that's a good point. And I seem to recall there was a piece about mining as well that was mixed into that too. And he wanted, again, kind of bringing up Elon Musk again, the whole idea of, you know, clean crypto mining in a more green and environmentally conscious fashion. He had some ideas, the head of El Salvador, whose name escapes me right now, who thought about rolling that out as well. So again, I mean, if to your moonshot kind of, you know, kind of analogy, it makes sense. If this actually fosters the type of innovation where someone said it's going to happen, by golly, I guess everybody else better figure out how to make it happen. And, you know, to some extent, they could become the Wyoming of Latin America, you know, where Bitcoin, cryptocurrency has become, you know, much more, you know, enabled by the state banking charters and regulations.
So this thing is called Article 7. Here's what it says. Every economic agent must accept Bitcoin as a payment when offered to him by whoever acquires a good or service. Wow.
That's yeah, exactly. And I think I remembered hearing 90 days. Do you see that in there too? I think that was what I heard of implementation.
Enforced is what they said. So let me ask you this. Does I want to ask the cynical and then the less cynical Glenn Zerbotti, but what does this mean? Like Venezuela? I mean, obviously the political climate there wouldn't, you know, be great for this. It's certainly not something their leadership would be interested in, because it would, you know, in some ways take away
power from the state. Yeah.
The bank control piece, but do you see other countries following in suit?
If it works, yeah, I think they're, you know, these El Salvador at this point is pretty far out on the bleeding edge. You know, to your point, if someone then kind of figures out how to build a mousetrap to make it work, then I could absolutely see other people doing it. This just feels very, very early. And again, that's where, you know, temporarily at least, this looked like it was going to actually create a nice basis for price support for Bitcoin. Because, you know, one of the things that we've talked about is, you know, it can only go so far as a pure speculative currency if there is an actual functioning, you know, means of exchange and entire infrastructure behind it, which we're seeing develop already with things like PayPal accepting it in its wallet and whatnot, then it suddenly, you know, has a much firmer foundation from which to thrive. And getting, you know, El Salvador is, you know, obviously not one of the top 10 countries in the world or anything, but if somebody is willing to take that step, that is still a vote of confidence. And then if it winds up getting backed up with something that shows to actually work as a use case in the real world, you know, then it's just a matter of, okay, somebody else sees it and says, oh, wow, that worked. Okay, I'll do it too.
Okay, so let's go back to my other thought process here, and I'll follow along that thought. There is that, okay, we know that theoretically, not theoretically, in fact, there are only 22 million Bitcoins to be mined, and we've already mined 18 million of them. Now that's slowing down a bit, but it is eventually going to hit that wall. What does that do to, you know, against an inflationary thing like the dollar, when the scarcity of something like that becomes even worse, and that's going to force it past the 9 decimal points, particularly if it's going to be worth, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90,000 one Bitcoin. I don't know.
That's always been an interesting one for me as well. I mean, when you're talking about, to me, a pretty high degree of value stability is essential for a long-term currency to have value. And when you have a fixed supply like that, unless somebody can create some kind of a layer on top of it, I don't really know how that really works. So that's always bothered me as well.
Yeah, and then the other thing is, and this is just, I don't know, I always thought that, you know, Bitcoin would stay as this like transitionary sort of service, like you can always convert to Bitcoin and back from it. But I always thought someone like Venezuela or maybe Mexico would pick up like a token built on a coin like Ethereum, where it would have this other valuable use case in it that could allow people to do, oh, I don't know, five part loans or HSAs or something that uses the smart contract and the consensus base of it a bit more. You know, Bitcoin was sort of the poster child for that, and it certainly, you know, still works in that regard. But it just seems like, you know, do you think they did their homework when they chose this particular Bitcoin, or do you think in the future they go, oh, not only do we accept Bitcoin, but we now accept Ethereum as well? I mean, or what happens?
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, and then how do you peg the two? I mean, how do you have two different legal tenders? I guess they both float independently in terms of their value. I guess there's nothing that says you can't do that. I'm not sure I've ever seen a country really try to pull that off before. But
I think you see it. I'll disagree. I think you see it all the time in like Mexico, where
that's true.
Because the U.S. dollar, you got the dollar.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, you're basically just almost in two separate economies, and one of them winds up being to some extent a gray economy. But to your point, yeah, I could see potentially. You know, I think that Bitcoin is the natural way to go because it is, you know, frankly, with the possible exception of Ethereum, I mean, the most quote unquote credible of the cryptocurrencies. It has name recognition. It has a long-term track record, et cetera. And, you know, it has high circulation. More people have touched it. It does have that big shortfall, in my view, in terms of this type of a use because of the fact that it has a certain fit. Am I right about that? You know a whole lot more about that. Are they unusual in Bitcoin in terms of having, you know, a fixed amount that there will ever be, and we're actually getting pretty close to that amount? Or are the other currencies set up that way as well?
Unusual, but it is, you know, it is like Dogecoin started that way, and now it's not.
And so,
there was, you know, it depends, right? So there's coins and tokens are built upon coins. I don't know. So let me throw another thing at you.
Okay, so yeah, so just to that point, though, I could see them taking something else in the future, but at least in the near term, I understand why they did Bitcoin. That was my answer to your question.
So in a world where we have state-sponsored ransomware, and we know that, you and I both know that, China has a mega collection of the mining. They've amassed the hardware. Some theoretically do say that, they have enough to overcome the 51% number on the consensus. Would you worry from a country standpoint and staking your legal tender against something that could potentially be manipulated by other? I guess you could say that about a lot of other things.
Yeah.
In this case, I mean, almost very sort of directly manipulated by.
Yeah, I mean, short answer to your question is absolutely I would worry about it. The second half of it is, quite honestly, I hadn't thought of that. I think it's a really, really good point. And I wonder if anybody in El Salvador had thought about that before. But you're right. You can drive yourself nuts with hypotheticals, but this one's a little bit further beyond the hypothetical stage too. And yeah, I don't think we ever actually got into that at the beginning. One of the reasons why we're watching Bitcoin's price drop so precipitously over the last couple of days is because China has cracked down in terms of the way they're managing cryptocurrency within their country. So that's, you know, put another kind of a lid on some of the capacity.
Well, pack your bags, Glenn. I need myself a cheeseburger bought with Bitcoin from McDonald's. And I think we're going to have to send you to El Salvador to get
it. Oh, it's going to be a tasty one by the time I get it back here, too, I'm sure. I think it's not a liquid, I don't think. So I could probably make it through TSA.
I just FaceTime and watch you eat it. But I think we're going to have to send you.
You're
going to
live vicariously, huh?
I live vicariously through it, but
I know that in New Zealand they put beets on them instead of onions. I don't know what they do with them in El Salvador. How they vary?
The different menu items based on their cultures is pretty wild. But that I digress. It's just a crazy idea from get to go. I mean, it was something. It's another example of just who saw this coming. And the answer is nobody. I can't imagine anyone. I mean, I know they did that little Bitcoin beach thing, but that's like a small little thing. That's like back in the day when we used to do closed loop cards and, you know, like as a test in a small community or maybe on a cruise ship or something, you know, to take it and go, yeah, that works great. And to call it a currency for their entire country, particularly when I just worry about, I mean, there were so many other coins I would choose. And why not build your own? Why not just go, okay, well, we're going to make our own.
Well, if you're El Salvador, I think their credibility was probably low enough already that everybody would really get, you know, their antenna up for some type of, you know, funny business at that point, which is why, again.
But you could build it on top of my point is you could build it on top of something that's pre-existing that would still maintain the trustworthiness, the anonymity, the other things that go with the value of the technology.
Yeah, but you know how these things work these days. Even if that is factually correct, you've just put another layer of having to explain to people who are, you know, intrinsically suspicious about it. So I can see why that wouldn't have flown. And, I agree with you that, you know, from a technical standpoint, I can see why there absolutely would have been a better solution in terms of a different coin. But, you know, working with the court of public opinion, I still think that was the way to go. Your question.
You know how when you go to the international, like you're in Atlanta, so you go, and I've been through the international at the Atlanta airport.
The international concourse. Concourse F these days.
Concourse, yeah. No longer T or whatever. Yeah,
they moved it from E, now it's F, yeah. They got good restaurants there, but not sure if they're open
anyway,
right now. Yeah.
So when you go there, they have that, usually before you get on the plane, there's a bunch of these conversion, stands.
Yeah.
So you could get some money in the vernacular or the tender of the country you're going to. I guess, those guys are going to have to sell Bitcoin.
Those things have always amazed me. It's like, at least in the last, 5 years, why anybody is still, I guess if you're talking about the unbanked maybe, but any place I've gone, I can show up and as soon as I land, I just go to the first ATM machine and I take out money in the local currency in a much better rate. But yeah, you're right. Well, and don't forget, you got companies like Bitcoin Depot where you can effectively do pretty much the same thing. I'm still not aware of anybody who literally takes, are you a physical embodiment of a Bitcoin as a form of payment?
Doesn't exist.
I know. It's like, you see it in pictures, but I'm sure there are people who probably think that those are actually something you can hand over the counter to someone, say, here, give me my quarter pounder.
I agree. Well, that is part of the deal. Like, think about this. I'll just throw another idea. So I know they have a pretty good homeless population in El Salvador. What do these people do? They beg for like pennies and things like that. And then they turn around and buy things. Like, think about how that little economy has to turn around for that.
Don't forget that it still was a parallel currency, so they could still do
that's
that.
True. You still got the dollar. Dollars.
But you're right. If you take it to its logical conclusion, somebody would be presumably looking and central bank digital currencies. Same basic idea. If you move to that eventually. Yeah, how's that any different? I've seen that they actually have mobile solutions to pay buskers electronically. I've seen a few of those things in place in Europe, never in person, but at least I've seen videos of it. I think that last mile of, the way that some forms of cash are used is going to be pretty darn tricky. I'm surprised by this conversation because not surprisingly, I'm not a big fan of what they're doing in El Salvador. I thought you'd be a little more bullish.
Just pick a different coin. So the other thing I wanted to see is, what did the World Bank say about this? So I just did a quick search and said World Bank.
Yeah, because I'd looked at it in terms of the International Monetary Fund, and they were not happy. But I did not see the World Bank.
Rejects El Salvador's request for help on Bitcoin implementation.
Okay, maybe that's the same thing I saw. I thought it was the IMF that said that, but okay.
But yeah, so the and he came to him and said, hey, we need some technical assistance. And they said, for what? Your fake money? Not happening. So interesting. But he said the negotiations with the International Monetary Fund had been successful, although IMS said last week there were financial legal issues and macroeconomic issues.
What a surprise. This feels to me like a Supreme Court decision where we have concurring opinions. We come out on the same side, but for slightly different reasons.
Yeah, I would have been more bullish. I definitely am bullish on them choosing a cryptocurrency. I see a lot of value in that. I just struggle with how quickly it was done. The fact that it doesn't look like there was a lot of homework put into it. And the choice of Bitcoin, I just feel like as a transactional legal tender, that it's just not, it doesn't ring true for me. It's almost like, it'd be like trying to pay in gold or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is. It's very much like that. I think that's a really good analogy. What I'm curious, if I'm right that it was 90 days that they were giving to banks and retail establishments, et cetera, to accept Bitcoin, what would you estimate to be a more realistic timeframe to get something like that rolled out. If you and choose your coin, doesn't matter, but to build the infrastructure to make that happen.
It's closer to what we had to do for, I think you have to draw a line in the sand, but I think I would look at the Euro implementation. How long did the Euro take to implement? Because I think it has a similar, sort of track. I think just because it's digital doesn't make it magically easy to put in place. So Euro was put together in 1999. And Greece became the 12th state to adopt it in 2001, and then in 2002. So it took almost 3 years.
I think that was even faster than I thought. And I would argue this is a little easier because you're only dealing with one country as opposed to a dozen or two in Europe. And now you do have more technological advancement. But yeah, I think we're kind of coming up about the same place. I would have thought 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, you asked me what coin. There's two I can think of. I would look closely, obviously, at Ethereum, because you could have a token created on top of that that has more value for the economy, and it could be like, for example, you could create an ICO or a token in the Ethereum model that would allow you to get all your receipts digitally in your wallet as part of this, right?
Yeah,
and you could create something that would more effectively deal with returns. You could create something that would give more, smart contracts around, other secure assets that you could build into it, like with insurance and things. I mean, with some forethought, you could put something in that would increase the value of that particular currency, but more importantly, would create efficiencies for the entire economy. And think about this. I mean, if you never had to print a receipt again, that's a lot of paper that goes away. And
there's your green answer right there. Yeah.
Well, not just a green answer, but even just, reducing that cost for all the retailers. So I think you could deal with fraud more effectively. That's going to be a problem with Bitcoin because, like I said, there isn't a lot of regulatory about how you get a wallet, how you can prove whether it's somebody's or not. So I for me, it would have been either Ethereum or, and this is, not financial advice. And certainly I am a investor in both Ethereum and this other coin. And I'm also, one of the people that was one of the founders, but I love Hedera HBAR. I think it's a lot of people give it a bad rap because it's not open source, or it is in a way, but and because it has a council as opposed to being just everybody. But I like the council. I like the idea that it's controlled by, a group of voting council members that are blue chip companies that, have some skin in the game.
Well, you made a really good argument for Ether. Is it a similar argument for Hedera, or what's the, what would be the other upsides that they would offer that something that's maybe a bit more better known? Like
Ether? The only argument I have for Hedera over Ether is even Ether takes how long it takes to clear a Bitcoin transaction if you want to buy something?
Oh yeah, I've seen that's it's not any. I mean, we complain about our supposedly antiquated legacy system, and it can take a lot longer to clear a Bitcoin transaction.
But for five or six confirmations, it could take half a day. And so the reason I would push HBAR, even Ethereum could be a little slower. The reason I would push HBAR is because it's so freaking fast. And I think if you're going to have a digital currency, it's got to be on par with Visa. It's got to be able to operate
that fast. Exactly.
And think about all the other stuff. Like for example, all the work that's been put into the protocols around VocaLink and everything else, and buybacks, fallbacks, there's just, there's a whole cottage industry around just even producing the terminals to take it, that I feel like is all going to be a waste because it could have been so much more well thought out with, call me El Salvador, I'll help design.
I was going to say, I'm hearing this and thinking, boy, if they had just called John Best before they actually made this announcement, they might have some.
They need to call like Chris Hughes. They should have called him. I mean, these guys, the DeFi guys, which I know we want to talk about a little bit here, but those are the guys that just can take it, or someone like Dr. Neiman Baird, who could have thought this through. And even you, we both know if someone said, hey, let's pull a group together and create a new currency, and with retail in mind, with payments in mind, with speed in mind, with fraud in mind, with security in mind, with identity in mind. Can you imagine what would come out of a talk like that?
That'd be one of those conversations. But it would take probably about 8 times as long as it did to actually even come up with this level of detail. And we would only be getting started. So I think that's one of the challenges. You know, you said something a few minutes ago that I thought was really interesting, because it's a term that I, you know, was hearing all the time. And I can't remember the last time I heard anybody mention an ICO, an initial coin offering. It's amazing how that kind of fell out of the vernacular so quickly. I almost wonder if we're going to see the same thing with the NFTs and SPACs and things like that. Because what was the last ICO you saw, or did I just kind of stop paying attention?
Well, I think you've stopped paying attention. There still are ICOs.
They're just not getting the same press they used to, I guess.
Well, they're not, because lately that, you know, the use case for coins has become such a big deal that everybody's sort of trying to figure that out. And I think that's important to understand, is that's the real value proposition. A coin in and of itself isn't very important, but if it does something, if it has, it's the token itself is there to provide the willingness and the wherewithal within the network to operate. So Filecoin's a great example. Filecoin exists to pay people for allowing people to store documents in a certain way. And that makes perfect sense to me.
You're right. I think it comes down to acceptance too. To me, it's a little bit like that VHS beta argument again too. I mean, technical capability isn't the be all and end all. Maybe it ought to be, but the fact that people stand ready to use it and then start using it and build things around it is one of the keys as well, right?
Exactly. And that was where my mind went initially. I heard that, I was just like, wow. Literally no thought was put into this is what I feel like. I mean, and, you know, like I said, I love the good people of El Salvador. I'm happy to help, but boy, you could have done something really magical here, and you could have led the world, you know, with a little work.
Maybe they still can. They could always pull it back and bring it back out. That wouldn't be the first time I've seen something like that happen. You know, you just mentioned DeFi, but we're coming up on time, and we actually had a guest who had to cancel who is an expert in the space. Why don't we hold off on that topic and do one on the more broad topic of distributed finance a couple weeks out?
Okay. How's good with that? I think that would be great.
We didn't do our usual kind of perfunctory stuff. You want to mention how people can find us?
Exactly. So I can be found by JB FinTech, so at JB FinTech on Twitter. You can also track me down on LinkedIn, just look up John Best. You can find me on Facebook. You can also go to our website, big-fintech.com. And lately, because of my new Tennessee home, I've actually been responding to smoke signals. So if
your cell phone reception is not great, but I hear that you're usually found around Mule Fest about this time of year too, if I'm not mistaken.
Best. There's no doubt about that. how about you, Glenn? Where can people find you? And by the way, I know I say this a lot, but there is no better person for payments. You're going to need a payment strategy. Things are unraveling fast. Did you see, just real quick before we go, did you see Dick Durbin's interaction with Mark Zuckerberg?
No. When was this? I totally missed that.
I don't know when it was. I just happened to catch it. And basically, Zuckerberg's in front of the Congress or whatever, and he says, Mark or Mr. Zuckerberg, would you mind sharing what hotel you stayed at last night? He's like, what? He's like, it'd be good to know what hotel you stayed at. And he goes, and then it dawns on him what Dick Durbin's doing. And he's like, no, I don't think I want to share that. He goes, oh, I'm sure you texted a few people over here. Would you mind sharing who those people were? And he's like, no. He goes, and then Durbin's like, well, that in itself, I believe, is our problem. I just thought it was brilliant. I was like,
that is interesting. Okay, wow. I was wondering where you were going with that. But
maybe if our engineer is really good, he can go find that clip on YouTube and play it at the end of it here.
I'll track that down.
My point is that payments are changing. We're looking at I'm worried about, as you pointed out, overdraft fees. And I just worry, like, how are you going to make any money on a checking account that we've been giving away free forever when they start to take away a lot of these other things? And so you need a payment strategy, and there is no person better on the planet than Glenn Sarvati. So
I appreciate that, John. And you can find me at 150 at 154 Advisors on Twitter. That's where I try to kind of set up shop occasionally, and I'm on LinkedIn as well, and always at the best innovation group site as well, bigfintech.com, big-fintech.com, I should say. And you'll also find the archives of all our past episodes there under the media tab as well. And there's more than enough to keep you busy there.
Check back each week for the latest from the Big Cast. Or better yet, we hope you'll consider subscribing for free via Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. Tweet us at Big Fintech, email info@big-fintech.com, or visit us at big-fintech.com and click on the media tab where you can post a comment or check out our archive of hundreds of past episodes. See you next week.